Blog Talk Radio.
I know.
By rights, we shouldn't even be here, but we are. It's like in the great stories, Mr. Brodo, the ones that really mattered, full of darkness and danger. And sometimes you don't want to know the end. Because how could the end be happy? How could the world go back to the way it was when so much bad had happened? But in the end, it's only a passing thing, this shadow.
We will make progress.
Even darkness must pass. A new day will come. And when the sun shines, it will shine out the clearer. Those were the stories that stayed with you, that meant something, even if you were too small to understand why. But I think, Mr. Frodo, I do understand. I know now. Folk in those stories had a lot of chances of turning back. Only they didn't.
And it's broken.
They kept going.
In corporate cash.
Because they were holding on to something.
Youth, people of color,
Frodo
the elderly, says, the disabled.
And what were they holding on to, Sam?
We, the 99%, have no political voice or representation.
That there's some good in this
world,
Mr. Frodo.
Party.
And it's worth fighting for.
And independent of the party.
Booyah! Perfect. I like that story. I like
but
it a
look
lot.
At our campaign for
it is a Pickle the Bear show. There are some things worth fighting for. That's why we do what we do. That's why I do what I do on this little radio show, this little podcast. Haven't been around for a while. It's been about a month, I guess. And I've been a little bit busy. I've been a lot busy. Having things going on in my life, in my real life, and such, and so I haven't really had a chance to come on the show. If you'll excuse me for just a second, I have got some feedback in my headphones, and I need to make a little adjustment here. Okay, why don't you have an adjustment with me? Ready? That was a little adjustment. I had some audio playing in the background. Hopefully it didn't come through on the radio. But anyway, welcome to the show. Man, what a weird day. So Pete Seeger died, and I didn't cry. I didn't get all weepy. I didn't, oh my God, my heroes are dying. I didn't get like that. I mean, when Howard Zinn died 4 years ago, like 4 years and 2 or 3 days ago, I did cry. I got very upset. He was a hell of a man, lived a hell of a life, and died, what, at 82, 84, something like that. Pete Seeger made it to 94, and what a hell of a life. What a hell of a ride he had. And I think tonight I'm going to spend a lot of time just playing some Pete Seeger songs and waxing on about them, what they mean to me. I've got a quote from a book. It's the American Folk Songs for Children book, and it's by Ruth Crawford Seeger, which is actually Pete's grandmother. And actually, it's not my book. It's my girlfriend's book, my comrade here, P.E. Nolan. Some of you know the story. Some of you don't, but it's she's my girl. And I have moved to New York City, and we are sharing. We are cohabitating now. Domestic partners, if you will, but she happens to have this book because she teaches small children, and she one of the things she likes to teach is, you know, be nice, play fair, don't hit, don't take things that aren't yours, you know, that socialist stuff. And she pointed out this quote. I'll bring you that later. So anyway, we're going to have some Pete Seeger. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about social justice, what you can do to make a difference, why you should do it. Because, you know, the stories. There is some good in the world. Frodo had it right, man. I'm just saying. So anyway, I'm a little bit discombobulated tonight because as I was putting the show together, I realized that tonight was the State of the Union address by our droner in chief, Mr. Obama, and I haven't watched any since maybe the first or second ones, and they just made me crazy. And I used to do a show every time he did a for the first few years. there would be a State of the Union speech, and then I would like dissect it and give my two cents on it. But I'm kind of over that now. I think by this time, if anybody really believes what's coming out of that man's mouth, or any man who sits, you know, in the presidency, or the dictatorship seat, or the CEO seat, or the billionaire's seat, the killionaire's seat, anyone who sits in a seat of power and authority is not to be paid attention to. They are lying, they lie for a living, and they lie, and they lie. And, you know, they hope that we the sheeple will believe the lies and just have a little hope for change. But anyway, I was going to do the Pete Seeger thing, and then I thought, well, okay, I'll tune into the State of the Union, because my friends Lee Camp and Dennis Traynor Jr. And a person I don't know, Eleanor Goldfield, who I hope to meet sometime, they were hosting a little thing over on a site called Talkers or Talk. It's Talkers, T-A-W-K-E-R-S, Talkers.com. Anyway, Lee's been doing these things where you can log in and there's a chat, so to speak. And the chat room has their chat and then the hosts interact. And so it was kind of an experiment tonight. It was really interesting. We got the live feed of the State of the Union address, had that playing, and then everybody was chiming in on what Obama was saying. And I must say, it's really, really, really heartening to know that there is some good in the world, and there are some smart people, and evidently they were all in Lee Camp's and Eleanor Goldfield's talker chat tonight. There's not one troll, not one person that believed anything this motherfucker was saying. Oops, there goes an F-bomb. But don't worry, F-bombs don't kill people. Real bombs kill people. So anyway, it's up late with Pinko the Bear, so that means, you know, the children are probably asleep. Besides, it's just an F-bomb. It's not like a drone that's killing, you know, innocent men, women, and children in, what, 11 different countries now, none of which have declared war on us, but we just, you know, go ahead and bomb them. It's a wedding party. Fuck them. Hey, that guy looks suspicious. Kill the whole family. Wait till the ambulances show up. First responders. Kill them, too, with a double tap, right? We love our own first responders, but you know what? If it's a first responder, if they're brown or yellow or black, well, fuck them. Just drop a bomb on them. That's the policy of the United States. And your beloved Mr. Obama. But I digress. So anyway, it was interesting. I was over at this talkers.com, and I was in it, and I was just seeing all these people and all the comments, and it was great to know that I am not crazy. I'm not the only one who thinks these things. I am not alone. You are not alone. You might be in the minority if you believe the truth about things. You might be in the minority if you think things are really going in a bad direction, and you might be in the minority if you think capitalism is a good thing, and you know, rising tide lifts all boats, and I don't know, minimum wage is okay, and dumping externalities on the environment and innocent masses is okay, strike breaking is okay. Yeah, anyway, so I'm a little frazzled. But get frazzled with me, man. Pop up with a bottle of red wine, get some PBR, do whatever you got to do. Smoke them if you got them. It's going to be, you know, I think it'll be an interesting show tonight. We're going to talk about the State of the Union just a little bit, and then move on to some other things. The chat room is open. I see there's a couple of guests in there. Yay! Hi, guests. And if you've never used the chat room at BTR, you can come in and hear the live stream in the chat room, and you can see what other people are chatting about. It's a little sparse in here right now, but I didn't do any promotion. I was busy making out with my girlfriend in the other room for the last hour instead of listening to the drivel that came out of the president's mouth, and all the backslapping and the cheerleading for the lies and the propaganda that just oozed out of us, just like a snake oil salesman, like you can't believe. But so yeah, there's the podcast will be here for everyone else who gets the link afterwards. But I would like to take some calls at some point if anybody's got thoughts about either Pete Seeger, social justice, capitalism, socialism, anarchism, you know, State of the Union, etc. And that number is 213-816-0357. But I think I want to play this clip. This is, it's not very long, and it is a response to the State of the Union. And this is not from the Republicans. It's not from the teabaggers. It's not from Jill Stein of the Green Party. This is from Dennis Traynor Jr., somebody I admire. Somebody, if you don't know who he is, he made the Occu documentary. Can't quite recall the name of it right now, but he was down at Occupy and made a documentary about the whole thing a couple years ago, and his information will be at the end of this clip. But this is the State of the Union response with Dennis Traynor Jr. on the Pinkle the Bear Show. Check this out. You should like it.
You can try to erase me, minimum wage me, news article page me, calling us crazy, your foundation is shaky, top heavy and lazy, with a stick of the size of the 80s.
Yeah.
Everyone who watches the State of the Union, even political junkies who hang on every turn of phrase, understand that the politicians are merely actors playing a part. They strut and fret their hours upon the stage until they are heard no more. The script being played out is a tale told by an idiot. It is full of sound and fury, but unlike the existential nihilism that Macbeth found at the end of his quest for power, it does, to the dismay of scores of us here in the United States, and indeed the world over, signify something. What follows then is my effort, were I a speechwriter for Obama, at the 2014 State of the Union. I'm not really good at impressions, so I'm going to have to ask you to imagine Obama speaking the following words. Mr. Speaker, Mr. Vice President, members of Congress, fellow citizens, 60 years ago, President Franklin D. Roosevelt delivered his annual State of the Union address to a nation as a fireside chat from the White House, in which he outlined a proposed second Bill of Rights that would lay the plans and determine the strategy for the winning of a lasting peace and the establishment of an American standard of living higher than ever before known. The power elite have been guiding this country in a direction in the exact opposite of the spirit behind that second Bill of Rights ever since. It's because of this, the outsized influence of a few rich people and multinational corporations, that I must report to you that the state of our union is in tatters, and if allowed to continue on its present trajectory, presents an existential threat to human life both at home and abroad and to the only habitat that human life has ever existed on. I'm speaking, of course, of planet Earth. First, tonight, I'm announcing that I will issue an executive order that's going to raise the minimum wage for federal contract workers to $10.10 an hour. And while most people on the right are going to take their cue from Mr. Tan and Spray sitting behind me and frown with folded arms, and most people on the left are going to stand and applaud like a bunch of fangirls at an anime convention, both sides of the aisle know this. If those of us in service to the power elite, and if you got elected, about 98% of you are in that group, don't at least make an attempt to keep up the illusion of the American dream, then the whole house of cards could come down. Count how many times I use the phrase middle class tonight in the State of the Union. The truth is, when you aspire to or have attained the label of American middle class, know that, first, the label itself was probably made in Bangladesh. And second, more importantly, the existence of a middle class, which, by definition, requires a poor class, in the richest country in the world, is immoral. Full stop. So we'll do this $10.10 an hour thing. And not only will we not jail Jamie Dimon, but we're going to secretly admire him for getting a raise while serving as a CEO for a company that had to shell out more in legal settlements this past year than the GDP of several continents combined. And just like the magic show that wowed you when you were kids, don't watch the left hand, and the right hand's going to go, whoa, 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 wham, bam, thank you, sir. The neoliberal, hungry, hungry hippo machine gobbles up all of the marbles and leaves the rest of us begging for crumbs like some bit player in a Dickensian pageant. Speaking of Dickens, it's time to admit, we lost the Industrial Revolution, the lifestyle it created, which we now think of as a non-negotiable of the middle-class lifestyle that $10.10 is supposed to help more of us attain, are generating increasing ratios of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere to the point where even U.S. Navy scientists are predicting an ice-free Arctic summer by 2016, 2 years. So ice won't reflect the sun, the Arctic Ocean will absorb the sun's rays, warming things up in a way that will alter jet streams and alter maps. Do you know the last time we had an ice-free Arctic summer? Never before in human history. Oh, I could tell you all to start composting and stop buying plastic water bottles, but the truth is, the greatest climate polluter in the world is the U.S. military. Yes, the 600-pound homicidal blowback-inducing elephant in the room is the U.S. military. The thing is, overreaching is part of our DNA as Americans. As an infant country, we expanded through a brutal campaign of genocide we condone in our high school curriculums with a lovely phrase, Manifest Destiny.
Yo!
These years later, Manifest Destiny has grown up and given birth to a child.
Yay!
Manifest Destiny's child. This child still governs our foreign policy decisions. It serves as the justification for the over 700 military bases we keep around the world. It serves as the justification for the extrajudicial drone killings in countries that haven't declared war on us and pose no threat to us. It serves as the justification for the massive spy agencies that we, quote, need to protect us. Ask yourself this, Mr. Speaker, Mr. Vice President, members of Congress, and viewers playing along at home, how much resources do the Swiss have to expend on protecting themselves from terrorists? Is there such a thing as an anti-Swiss terrorist network? Chew on that, please. Manifest Destiny's child is a threat to all living things and must be euthanized immediately. Here I'm supposed to end with some God bless the United States of America, but let's not play that fairy tale game any longer.
Let's not
open our eyes and let's get to work.
Let's open our eyes and get to work,
watching.
People.
This is Resistance Report on Acronym TV. If you like the show, please subscribe to us here on YouTube. Share these videos with your social networks and know that we are independently produced and viewer supported. If you'd like to support us, there's a link to do so in the video description. It's quick, it's easy, it takes just a second and just a couple of seconds. It takes just a couple of seconds and just a couple of bucks a month. Thank you very much.
There you go. Throw him a couple bucks. Dennis Traynor Jr., just Google him. An acronym TV is on YouTube. And, you know, if you're into the resistance, if you're into the lefty-leftist stuff, if you'd like a better world, maybe perhaps you're a socialist, an anarchist, an anti-statist, an anti-capitalist, maybe you're just a reforming kind of liberal. I don't know. Any of those will do. Get over and check out what Dennis has to say on a weekly basis. Check out his archives. I think we've also got him at the commonsprojectnetwork.com. Me and some of my friends have this little website where we try to you know, add content from all lefty leftist perspectives. And I do believe we're still posting his stuff, as well as Lee Camp's stuff up there. Bob Carson, Carson's Corner. We got the Pink of the Bear Show. We got Worldwide Hippies. I mean, you just listen to that stuff. Good stuff. TheCommonsProjectNetwork.com, even though there's no commercial to it, it's not like we're making money. We do it because, well, we think it's important to talk about these things, spread the word, and plant the seed, so to speak. Because this country's not anywhere near revolution. It's not. And we need a thought revolution. We need people to think differently. I mean, it's so much easier to imagine the end of the world from an asteroid than it is to imagine the end of capitalism for most people. But, yeah, it is the best system since feudalism, but we can do better. And there's a lot of folks out there that are trying to make it better. Kevin Zeese, Margaret Flowers over at thepopularresistance.org, another great site. I've got something from them coming up a little later. You know, another person that's trying to make the world a little better is Cindy Sheehan. Cindy, of course, kind of became the face of the anti-war movement when there was one, when there was a Republican in office, if you might remember George Bush. She tragically lost her son, Casey, for the lie of the Iraq War and went down to Crawford, Texas. And she got herself on the news quite a bit because Fox just was, you know, their heads were exploding. But anyway, she's still in California, and she's running for president. She's running to raise awareness. Never going to be president, but running to raise awareness, and I think greatly admire her, and I've marched with her, and Good woman. At any rate, I was over at her page because I know she had some things to say about the State of the Union. And I scrolled back a little bit and I found this. Because, you know, tonight, I mean, he said, how many times did he mention the middle class? We had to drink every time Obama mentioned the middle class. You know, you wouldn't be listening to this show in real time. You'd be dead drunk or just dead. But there was an article by Paul Krugman or one of the reformist, still pro-capitalist, but, you know, Democratic shills for the New York Times. He was talking about why isn't there why haven't we seen a middle-class revolt? And Cindy, in true form, is like, what the fuck kind of question is, why aren't we having a middle-class revolt? What middle class? See, that's the language of capitalism. And then she says, join my epic campaign in California. We believe that 100% of the people should own 100% of the wealth and poverty in California. Amen, sister. 100% of the people should own 100% of the wealth, not 1% owning, say, 40, and then the next 2 or 3% owning the next 30 or 40 collectively. You know, no. You don't. Hey, you take your kids to school. You put them in a playroom. There's 10 kids. There's 10 toys. There's 10 lunches. You don't let one kid have 9 toys or 6 toys or even 2 toys or 9 lunches and or 6 lunches or even 2 lunches. No. Even. Everybody gets a toy. Everybody gets to eat. We can understand that, right? But somehow we think it's okay when the billionaires and the killionaires of the world have most of the fucking toys and most of the fucking lunch, not to mention the clean water, and the good property, and the police in their pocket, the military in their pocket, the government in their pocket. How about a little social justice? How about a little equality? That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. So I don't know. She was let me just share a couple things off of her wall. Some are related to the State of the Union. Actually, they all are related to the State of the Union in one way or the other because it is what it is here in the Union. She said, "I remember 8 years ago when I was dragged out of the State of the Union address. Actually, I remember this." She was arrested. She was chained to a wall in the Capitol Hill police station until about 11 p.m. that night. Then she was driven around D.C. in the back of a cop car, freezing cold, and got lectured by the fucking pig. Excuse me, got lectured by the cop about how I am, this is her words, how I am tarnishing my son's sacrifice, his sacrifice for the empire, by my work. Her work is in activism. As an activist. I'm not sure what I landed where my sister picked me up and brought me a coat. It was a rough night. I did get monetary compensation for false arrest a few years ago, though. So you can beat the rap in this country. You just can't beat the ride. And if they don't like you, they'll take you for a ride. And if you're tenacious enough, you can get some compensation down the road. But I like this one about an hour and a half ago. She put this up. State of the Union address. A big room filled with fugly war criminals. The peace movement needs more paddy wagons. Sorry, I don't know a non-derogatory word for paddy wagon. Yeah, you know, if you want to be PC, paddy wagon, yeah, throw the drunken Irish in the big wagon. I get it. I don't know. There's another word for paddy wagon. I don't know it. She doesn't know it. We used it. That's the way it goes. And so evidently Obama was talking about $10.10 an hour as a fair wage. Well, fuck you, Obama. And fuck everybody who thinks $10.10 an hour is a fair wage. I'm sorry. You can't live on $10.10 an hour. You can't survive on $7.35. That was the cry December 5th when I went down to the rally, the march. Here in New York City from Foley Square over to Zuccotti Park. It was a fast food workers strike day. So, okay, 10 an hour, really? Because you know what? If minimum wage had kept up with inflation over the last 30, 40 years, it would be, well, some say $16 an hour, some say $20 an hour. I don't know which is true, but it's not 10-10. I'm not even going to get into, you know, what is even a fair wage. I don't think any wage is fair. I think a worker should own and control 100% of the fruits of their labor. But then that wouldn't be capitalism. Go to hell about not wanting the taxpayers to foot the bill for the housing crisis ever again, as Obama said. Go to hell, Obama. You're the one. You were the major pusher for that shit back in 2008. Oh, how the sheeple forget, but some of us don't. Some of us don't. Oh, here's a great one from Obama tonight. My fellow Americans, no other country in the world does what we do. My answer, thank the goddess. Thank dog, no other country in the world does what we do. The greatest purveyors of violence on the planet. Worst empire ever. It'll be one of the shorter ones, too, as it crumbles under its own hubris. Anyway, those are just some thoughts from Cindy and thoughts, well, from me. $10.10 an hour, huh? Is that enough, huh? Really? Hey, maybe if I got $10.10 an hour, I'll forget about that whole kill list thing that you've got on Taco Tuesdays in the White House, where you get together with your fellow criminals and decide who to assassinate all around the world with your drones, Mr. Obama, including American citizens and their offspring. Yeah, I'm cool with the kill list. Just give me $10.10 an hour. Yeah, I'm cool with the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP. Sure, just give me $10.10 an hour. Even better yet, just talk about it on the State of the Union. Smile a lot. Act like you're on our side. We'll forget about the TPP. We'll forget about how horrific that it's NAFTA on steroids. Just promise me $10.10 an hour. All we got tonight is a bunch of sugarcoating, a bunch of spin, sugar. It was just crap. That's why I liked Dennis's 2014 State of the Union response. I liked it a lot. So anyway, it was kind of cool. There were like 500 people over at the State of the Union Live Talk, TAWK. But the main thing is I was just glad to know that there weren't a bunch of crazy people in there. There were just people who actually understand what's going on. Oh, and Mr. Obama, promoting fracking. Sure. Excellent. Just say it with a pretty face. Say it with a pretty smile. And you know what? He had one line about climate change. Do you remember? He did have one line about climate change. That was his only sentence about the thing that can actually drive us to extinction. That was it. One line. I hope you enjoyed that line. It was a mighty fine line. Stuff makes me crazy. No, that's my president. I just love Michelle. She's got great arms, doesn't she? Oh, she's so lovely. Did you see her dress? And the children are so beautiful. And that dog, what a great dog. Propaganda. It's crap killing you. When your life doesn't work out the way you thought it should, don't be blaming the brown people taking your jobs. Don't be blaming the government for having too many regulations that you can't start your small business. Don't be looking at that shit. Look at the overall picture. Imperialism, colonialism, neocolonialism, perpetual war. 55 cents out of every dollar that you send to Washington gets spent on the war machine. It's not somebody cheating on welfare. You look at the pie chart, you can't even see that compared to what's where your money's getting pissed away on bombs and guns and nonsense to keep you safe. Safe. Sweden's safe. Finland's safe. Germany, Japan, they're safe. Costa Rica's safe. Canada's safe. What are they doing? What are they doing? They spending all this money? No. The United States spends more than every other country on this planet combined on warfare. And it's not to keep you safe. Okay, I'm getting just a little bit worked up. I think we need something mellow, something smooth. And I'm going to take a break. When we come back, enough about this State of the Union. Call me up if you like. We can talk about it if you like. In the meantime, we're going to have some Pete Seeger. Pete Seeger died today, 94 years old. And no, I did not cry. 94 is a hell of a ride. And a hell of a ride for somebody who spent his entire life being an example of what it is to be a proper and good human being. And so rest in peace. Peace. Ouch. Sorry about that.
What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that Washington never told a lie. I learned that soldiers seldom die. I learned that everybody's free. That's what the teacher said to me. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that policemen are my friends. I learned that justice never ends. I learned that murderers die for the crimes, even if we make a mistake sometime. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned our government must be strong. It's always right and never wrong. Our leaders are the finest men, and we elect them again and again. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that war is not so bad. I learned about the great ones we have had. We fought in Germany and in France, and someday I might get my chance. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school.
Yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. All right, enough of that clapping. See, if I had a professional studio with a professional assistant, it would all be really smooth. But then, you know, we'd have to hire somebody, and I'd have to sell commercials, and, you know, that would suck. Yeah, school, man. I'm not saying school's a bad thing, man. Education is great, but you got to be very, very careful about what you do learn in school. You have to be careful about what grown-ups tell you is true and is not true, because you could find yourself being a grown-up, not understanding your world, hating the wrong people, misidentifying the enemy, misidentifying exactly why life is so hard. Doesn't have to be this way. One of the things about going to school is they like to put you in little boxes. Oh, Tommy's going to be an engineer. She's going to be a nurse. They like to put you in boxes. They like to teach you what to think. They don't teach you how to think. They send you off to the university, and you all come out looking the same. And this is one of my favorite songs. You might know it if you're younger. You might know it as the theme song from Weeds, the Showtime show from a few years ago. But this is Pete Seeger, Little Boxes. Listen to the words and think about your children, what they're learning at school, throughout life, what the grown-ups are telling them, what you're telling them, and always question whether or not it's true.
Little boxes on the hillside, little boxes made of ticky-tacky, little boxes, little boxes all the same. There's a green one and a pink one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky and they all look just the same. And the people in the houses all went to the university, and they all got put in boxes, little boxes all the same. And there's doctors and there's lawyers and business executives, and they all get put in boxes and they all come out the same. And they all play on the golf course and drink their martini dry, and they all have pretty children, and the children go to school, and the children go to summer camp, and then to the university, and they all get put in boxes, and they all come out the same. And the boys go into business and marry and raise a family, and they all get put in boxes, little boxes all the same. There's a green one and a pink one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they all made out of ticky-tacky and they all look just the same.
Ain't that the truth? So when you send them to the little boxes, send them prepared. Send them prepared. Talk to them. Don't just ask them, hey, what'd you learn in school today? Then ask them, do you think that's really true? And explain to them if it is or if it isn't. One of my favorite songs. So I normally, when I do this show, I just, you know, look at what's been going on for the week, grab a six-pack, maybe a bottle of red wine, smoke them if I got them, ramble on about this kind of stuff. And every show is kind of organic. This is no, like, you know, months of planning or whatever. It's just me being a little cathartic, you know, to get on and talk about this stuff. But interesting, when I was talking about doing some Pete Seeger stuff, my girlfriend came by and she's like, oh, really? Well, do you know about his children's songs? I was like, sure. I know about his children's songs. I only know some of them, right? It's not like I listen to Pete Seeger all the time. But she told me there's just a whole ton of them and children's songs. And she pulled off of her bookshelf. And by the way, she teaches preschools, twos, threes, fours, maybe fives. But she teaches 25 years in this. And one of the reasons she does that is because she wants to teach them well. It's not okay to hit. You really do need to share. It's not okay that somebody gets two lunches and you get none, or you get a half of one. No, those socialist, communist, pinko, lefty thoughts, I love them. But anyway, she pulled this book out, and this book is by Ruth Crawford Seeger. This is Pete Seeger's grandmother, and it's called American Folk Songs for Children. And I didn't get a chance to look at a lot of it, but she brought my attention to one of the passages early on in the book, page 21, and I really like this, and I wanted to share this with you. I want you to think about it. The headline is, Why American Folk Music for Our Children? You know, why American folk music for our children? I mean, I was a kid in the 60s, and we listened to If I Had a Hammer, right? We listened to a lot of this folk music. And, you know, I didn't really get it. I'm like, wait a minute, man, I'm not that good with a hammer. I might hurt my thumb. But I didn't really get it, but I guess some of the other kids did. Maybe I was a little slow. I'll play it later, and then we'll all get it because we're grown-ups now. But there's a really interesting paragraph. Actually, I'm going to read two because the first one, it goes like this. This kind of traditional or folk music is thoroughly identified with the kind of people who made America as we know it. It's music that they liked and still like. They make it, and they're still making it. And some of it came with them from other countries and has been a little changed. Some of it came with them from other countries and has been changed. I said that. Some of it grew here. All of it has partaken of the making of America. Our children have a right to be brought up with it. Now, this will make Republicans' heads explode. This will make neoliberal Democrats' heads explode. But here's the deal, second paragraph, which I think says a lot. If one of the aims of education is to induct the child into the realities of the culture in which he will live, may we not say that this traditional music and language and ideology, which has not only grown out of, but has turned, has in turn influenced that culture, and is still influencing and being used by it, should occupy a familiar place in the child's daily life, even though it may not be current in the particular neighborhood in which he happens to be living. Many of us, and this is the thing, many of us open a savings account at a bank when a child is born and add layer after layer of small deposits, which he can later draw on for college education. Perhaps a fund of songs might be begun as early and added to layer after layer, an ever-growing wealth of materials which he can draw on at will and can take along with him as links from himself to the various aspects of the culture he will be going out to meet. I really, really like that passage. So yeah, so let's teach him some songs, really young, nothing too deep, nothing too heavy. Children's songs about how to be nice, to play fair, to get along, to treat one another respectfully, you know, not be a racist shit, not be an entitled little prick, you know? How about we have these messages in children's songs? And then as they get older, there'll be other songs, maybe a little heavier. Maybe you'll have some Bob Dylan, some Joan Baez, maybe some Arlo Guthrie, maybe some, oh, I don't know, Rage Against the Machine, some Rebel Diaz, some Immortal Technique, if you want to go all hip-hop. Revolutionary ideas, revolutionary music. And Pete Seeger had these revolutionary songs, but for children. And I want to play one of these. This one is, what's it called? Oh, yeah. Don't Push Me Down. Now, this is not actually Pete Seeger singing it. This one was really hard to get. The Smithsonian evidently has all the Pete Seeger children's songs on lockdown, and you can't just, like, find them off the Internet or on YouTube. But I got a different version. And this one's from Lightnin' Hopkins. And Don't Push Me Down. This is a children's song. And this is why I think it illustrates so much of why Pete Seeger is important and the message in his songs are important, particularly, you know, teaching small kids. Don't Push Me Down.
You can play with me. You can hold my hand. We can skip together down to the petrol man. You can wear my daddy's hat. You can wear my mama's dress. Can't even laugh at me, but don't push me down. Well now, don't you push me, don't you push me, don't you push me down. Don't you push me, don't you push me, don't you push me down. You can play with me, we can build a house. You can play with my ball and roll it all around. You can take my skates, skate them up and down. You can't even get mad at me. Don't you push me down. Well, don't you push me, don't you push me, don't you push me down. Baby, don't you push me, don't you push me, don't you push me. You can play with me, and we can play all day. You can use my dishes if you put them away. You can feed me apples, oranges, and plums. You can even wash my face, but don't you push me down on it. Baby, don't you push me, don't you push me, don't you push me down. Don't you push me, don't you push me, don't you push me down. No, don't you push me, push me, push me, don't you push me down.
Yeah, I do like that one. And you know, and that's what they do. You know, I'll share a little with you. Hey, you can wear my clothes. You can have some of my food. You can maybe a little shelter. Tell you a joke. Give you a hug. We can share things. We can work together. We can get along. Just don't push me down. Don't be a bully. And it starts like that, right? You get that in your brain. And hopefully layer after layer, as you get older and you get older, you get a little stronger message and you understand, and you eventually understand about the nature of the state, the bully nature of all of the institutions, the hierarchical institutions of power and oppression. The cops and the military and the hoops and the legal hoops and all the, you can't do this and you can't do that. And let's just get in your little box, conform, come out of that little box and go into another little box, conform some more so you're all the same, so you're easily controlled. And I submit to you, we should not go into the little boxes. We should not conform. We should not all be the same. And we should not, under any circumstances, allow people to push us down without pushing back. This is revolutionary music for 4-year-olds, 2-year-olds, 9-year-olds. You can move on to Rage Against the Machine and that stuff as well. Or Immortal Technique, Rebel Diaz, who else? There's so many. Or you can listen to Conway West and Justin Bieber and just, like, I don't know, go shoot yourself. Huffington Post, who I normally don't read, had a nice little, you know, thing. Now, if you're just joining me here, this is the Pink Old Bear Show. We talked about the State of the Union a little bit, blah, 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 blah. But we're on to Pete Seeger now. But this is an AP report. Was carried over at the HuffPo. Came across my radar because somebody showed it, and it was a good article. Unable to carry his beloved banjo, Pete Seeger used a different but equally formidable instrument, his voice, to instruct yet another generation of young people how to effect change through song and determination 2 years ago. This is during Occupy. A surging crowd, two canes in 7 decades, as a history-shifting singer and rabble-rouser, buoyed him as he led Occupy Wall Street protests through Manhattan in 2011. He said, quote, "Be wary of great leaders. Hope that there are many, many small leaders." Smart man. The banjo picking troubadour who sang for migrant workers, college students, and starstruck presidents in a career that introduced generations of Americans to their folk music heritage, died Monday, age 94. His grandson said his grandfather died peacefully in his sleep around 9:30 p.m. New York Presbyterian Hospital. He'd been there for 6 days. Family members were with him. And you know what? God bless him, man. 93 and in your sleep with this kind of resume. What he did with his life. Grandson said he was chopping wood just 10 days ago. With his lanky frame, used worn banjo, and full white beard, Seeger was an iconic figure in folk music who outlived his peers. He performed with the great minstrel Woody Guthrie. He had a show on him, or two, in his younger days, and co-wrote If I Had a Hammer, co-wrote Turn, 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 you might know it from the Byrds, Where Have All the Flowers Gone, Kisses Sweeter Than Wine. He lent his voice against Hitler and against nuclear power. In fact, I've got that song, the Hitler song. I love it. We're going to play it right after this. A cheerful warrior, he typically delivered his broadsides with an affable air, unlike Pinko the Bear, who gets a little caustic, and his fingers poised over the strings of a banjo. If I could play banjo and sing, I might do the same. In 2011, he walked nearly 2 miles with hundreds of protesters swirling around him holding signs and guitars, later admitting the attention embarrassed him. But with a simple gesture, extending his friendship, Seeger gave the protesters and even their opponents a moment of brotherhood the short-lived Occupy movement sorely needed. When a policeman approached Tao Rodriguez, Seeger said at the time he feared his grandfather would be hassled. But the policeman, he reached out and took my hand and said, thank you, this is beautiful. That really did it for me. The cops recognized what we were about. They wanted to help our march. They actually wanted to protect our march because they saw something beautiful. It's very hard to be anti-something beautiful. Now, that's not the experience I had, or a lot of people have, but that's not to say it didn't happen, and I don't doubt this man. But that was the message Seeger spread his entire life. With the Weavers, that was a quartet back in the 40s, 48, Seeger helped set the stage for a national folk revival. The group, Seeger, Lee Hayes, Ronnie Gilbert, Fred Hellerman, turned out hit after hit recordings of like Goodnight Irene, Top of Old Smoky, not one of my favorites, but you know. Seeger was also credited with popularizing We Shall Overcome, and now that's the song, right? He didn't write it, but he popularized it. He put it in his People's Song, it was a booklet, People's Songs, in 1948. He later said his only contribution to the anthem of the civil rights movement was changing the second word from will to shall, which he said opens up the mouth better. We will overcome, we shall over. Yeah, I get that. I like it. Every kid who ever sat around a campfire singing an old song is indebted in some way to Pete Seeger. That's what Arlo Guthrie once said. His musical career was always braided tightly with his political activism, in which he advocated for causes ranging from civil rights to the cleanup of his beloved Hudson River. Seeger said he left the Communist Party around 1950, and he later renounced it. That's when he found out more shit about Stalin. He said, okay, gotta go. But the association obviously dogged him for years. He was kept off of commercial television for more than 10 years, more than a decade, after tangling with the House Un-American Activities Committee back in 1955. Are you now or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party? Mr. McCarthy, go fuck yourself. Repeatedly passed by the committee to reveal whether he had sung for communists, Seeger responded sharply, I love my country dearly and I greatly resent this implication that some of the places that I have sung and some of the people that I have known and some of my opinions, whether they are religious or philosophical, or I might be a vegetarian, make me any less an American. Nice. I like it. So he was charged with contempt of Congress, but the sentence was overturned on appeal. Well, there you go. So in the 50s, that's the years when he was denied broadcast exposure. The high point of his career was in the 50s. He was on the road, man. He was hitting the college campuses, spreading the music that he and Guthrie and Lead Belly and other people had created or preserved. He said, the most important job I did was to go from college to college to college to college, one after another, usually small ones. And I showed the kids there's a lot of great music in this country, but they never played it on the radio. Amen. His scheduled return to commercial network television on the highly rated Smothers Brothers, that's when I first saw him. They had a variety show back in 67. It was hailed as a nail in the coffin of the blacklist. Because the blacklist, you know, hey, if you were a commie or hung out with commies or had coffee with commies or looked like a commie or somebody said you were a commie, well, you couldn't get a work. You couldn't get work. So in 67, they finally thought they'd put all that stuff away. He gets on the Smothers Brothers. But CBS, good old CBS, corporate hacks that they are, they cut out his Vietnam protest song. The song was called Waist Deep in the Big Muddy. And, of course, he rightly accused the network of censorship, which is exactly what they did. But he did finally get to sing it 5 months later in a stirring return appearance, although one station in Detroit cut the song's last stanza. And the last stanza goes like this. Now, every time I read the papers, that old feeling comes on. We're waist deep in the big muddy, and the big fool says to push on. Yeah. Seeger's output included dozens of albums and singles recorded for adults and children, as I mentioned earlier. Anyway, the article goes on and on. You can read all about it at the Huffington Post, but I just wanted to give... share a little bit more about him and his voice and his music and really I think what the legacy is. And if you have children, I think they should be listening to his children's songs. I do. I think they need to also read that book by Robert Fulghum, Everything I Needed to Know About Life, I Learned in Kindergarten. Be nice, play fair, put the toilet seat down, say please and thank you. Don't take what's not yours. Don't hit people. You know, extend that out. Don't bomb people. Don't take away their earned money and taxes and throw it away on imperialism. Don't bully people. Don't oppress people. Just saying, I think it's a really good way to live your life. He's a great human. And he was a leader by example. He's a friend of the environment. A friend of peace. Pete Seeger died yesterday at 94. Pink of the Bear Show, I'll be back in, 2-3 minutes.
If I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning. I'd hammer in the evening, all over this land. I'd hammer out danger, I'd hammer out a warning. Hammer out love between the brothers and the sisters all over this land. If I had a bell, I'd ring it in the morning, I'd sing it in the evening, all over this land. I'd ring out danger, I'd ring out a warning, ring out love between the brothers and the sisters all over this land. If I had a song, I'd ring it in the morning, all over this land. I'd sing out danger, I'd sing out a warning, sing out love between the brothers and the sisters all over this land. Well, I got a hammer, and I got a bell, and I got a song to sing all over this land. The hammer of justice, it's the bell of freedom. Song about love, the deep of the all over this land. Well, I got a hammer, and I got a bell, and I got a song to sing all over.
hammer of justice. It's the bill of freedom. Long about love, the truth, the rose and the green.
Yeah, there you go. See, when I was really little, I just thought it was about a hammer and nails. And I'm like, well, what about a saw? Huh? What about a saw? What about another tool? What about a lathe? But I get it now. Actually, I got it when I got a little older. It's a hammer of justice, love, and peace, little naked bunny rabbits doing the right thing. All right, it is the Pink of the Bear Show. Oh, one of the things I've been reading a lot lately because I have a little time on my hands. And, you know, living with a school teacher and a reader, you know. But one of the books I've been planning on getting around to for quite a while was George Orwell's Homage to Catalonia, which I think, I mean, you know, 1984, an Animal Farm, right? But this one, I've been told, is really one of his best books, and I got to say, I think so. And it was about his time in the Spanish Civil War, left England, joined the anarchists to actually join the Puma, I think is what it was called. But at any rate, joined one of the early militias fighting on the anarchist side. There was eventually a split, and I don't want to go into the whole history, because I'm not an expert, but it was a really fascinating read, and how the state socialists, state communists, basically purged all the anarchists during the war, and then, of course, promptly lost the Civil War, but that's another subject. But I ran across this. This is a Pete Seeger. Evidently, he's got something, a whole bunch of songs of the Spanish Civil War. Now, I've never heard any of these. It's not something that, you know, I never saw it. But it's interesting, and it's a song, but it's got some spoken word and storytelling time in between. So if you've got any familiarity with what went on in Spain prior to World War II during the Spanish Civil War, you might find this interesting. I know I did, and it's a Pete Seeger Songs of the Spanish Civil War.
I was in the U.S. Army in 1944, waiting to go overseas, and I had a weekend pass and went up to New York and found that Moses Ash, who later on ran Folkways Records, was willing to record these songs of the Abraham Lincoln Brigade. Sunday we recorded six songs, some in English, some in our fractured Spanish. I didn't really know how to speak or sing the language, but I guess a lot of the brigade members didn't know very well either.
There's a valley in Spain called Jarama. It's a place that we all know so well, where we all learned the true cost of freedom, and so many of our brave comrades fell. We are proud of the Lincoln Battalion and the fight for Madrid that they made. There we fought like the sons of the people, as a part of the 15th Brigade.
When I went back to Spain in 1971, I was not allowed to sing these songs by the Franco government. However, in 1978, Franco was dead, and I came back and sang for huge audiences, and of course I sang all these songs.
when the hearts of your people were divided. You will never find friends such as we. From this valley you know we are going. Do not hasten to bid us adieu. Although we lost the battle of Harama, we'll set that valley free before we're through.
I said, how come you sing these songs in the same versions that I sing? And they said, oh, we learned them off your record. We made tapes of them and brought them across the border and played them for each other. Of course, if we played them very loud, we might have gotten arrested. So that little record kept alive in Spain some of these songs.
All the world is like the valley Harama, so green and so bright and so fair. Now we're far from that valley of sorrow, but for the memories we carry from there. Now we're far from that valley, Harama, but for the memories we carry from there.
Kept alive in Spain some of these songs.
And there you have it. I like that one. That one was new to me, probably new to you as well. Boom, 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 boom. Anyway, this is the Pink of the Bear show. Welcome to it. Hi, folks in the chat room. Benjamin, Bill Gibbons, what's up? I don't normally look in on the chat room because I got like too much stuff going on because I'm trying to do the show. So I don't, I'm not able to like talk in real time in the chat room. In fact, you know what? Now would be a good time. We've got 45 minutes left. I mean, I could play some more Pete Seeger stuff. I could move on to another subject. But I know that Bill's got a question. Well, this was interesting. Bill says, when it came to Spain, the anarchists quit and went back to their communes. That's interesting because George Orwell was actually, you know, fighting. And that's not the story he tells in Homage to Catalonia. he tells it a different way, that the communists were purging the militias and actually outlawed the anarchist militias. Now, the anarchist militias, for people who don't know, they were the working, the unions. They were basically different unions, working class unions in the Catalonia region. And when Franco, you know, attacked and tried to, you know, basically, you know, take over the country, which he did, he succeeded. It was there was no organized resistance. The unions got together and said, "No, this is our country. This is our land. This is our shit. And we're going to go fight." And they had like really lousy rifles, and it was just horrible. But they did what they could do for the first couple of years until a regular army could be put together. And by that time, the Stalin and the communist, the state communists, had come in on the side of the republic against the fascists. And eventually, the communists purged all the anarchist militias. And they outlawed them, made them illegal, rounded them up in mass, executed them, disappeared them. And the only way that Orwell, an Englishman, the only way that he and his wife escaped was by pretending to be bougie tourists, artists from England that were just happened to be in the country, you know, and they made their way to France and escaped. When he first got there, there was no there were no class lines anymore. The working class was firmly in control of the region, and there was no yes sir, no sir. Everything was comrade. Everything was salud. There was no bouginess. There was just no class lines. Now, some people were pretending because they knew better. and then by the time, when he was done with his militia service, he got shot through the neck and was recovering. By the time he got through with his service and was leaving the military, the resistance, he had to pretend not to be part of that group, the anarchist group that were fighting against the fascists, because it had become clear that instead of an actual revolution, a workers' revolution, it was basically a civil war between competing state capitalists, the communist state capitalist system, and Franco and his fascist state capitalist system. So. But anyway, you can read the book, Homage to Catalonia, if you like. I highly recommend it. Orwell will also say that, hey, man, I only know what I know, saw what I saw, talked to people, you know, experienced my experience. Maybe somebody else's experience was different. But history is a funny thing. It's really difficult to know if you weren't there. It's difficult to know who to listen to. But I think based on everything I know about Orwell, I got to come down on his side on this one. Animal Farm was basically an indictment of state communism. And yeah, I identify as a pinko commie, but not a Stalinist, not a Maoist, not a state communist. Hierarchical dictatorship from the top, I think, is bullshit. I know other people think that it's necessary. I ran into a bunch of those kind of folks here in New York recently when I went to a meeting of a Socialist Equality Party. It felt very, they're trots, I think, mostly, but very hierarchical, our way or the highway kind of thing. And one of the reasons I moved to New York, well, the main reason was for the girl, right? But one of the nice bonuses about living in New York is I can get involved in all sorts of activism. I mean, back home, where I had been living in Reno, there was Occupy, there was a Reno Initiative for Shelter and Equality. We feed the homeless every Saturday, now a nonprofit. There's the Burner Community, charity work involved in that as well. There's the IWW, Industrial Workers of the World, of which I'm a member and have been for several years. We, you know, labor rights protests. There's a small community of activists there trying to make the world a little better place, raise awareness, immigration reform, immigrants' rights, that kind of thing. But in New York, it's here in spades. I mean, it's everywhere. There's so many opportunities. And just in the short time that I've been here, I've already been able to connect with some people and go to some actions. And I plan on doing some more. And I'm not one of these people that, you know, I'm a better anarchist than you. I'm not like, people, the left is so fractured. And everybody, not everybody, but so many people think it's, you know, their way is the best way. I say whatever makes the world a little bit better place. If that's charity, you know, feeding the homeless, warm clothing drives, if it's marching for a livable wage, $15 an hour, whatever it is you can do, do it. Do it in your hometown. Do it wherever you can. You go to visit friends, hey, do it in their town. Show up. Go to a May Day rally. Talk to people. Do some tabling. Join some sort of anarchist, socialist, or communist organization. Just, I would say, stay away from the state communist situations. You know, I'm just not big on the whole top-down dictatorship type stuff. Anyway, I wanted to play a couple. Oh, by the way, the phone lines are open. This is what I started to say. 213-816-0357. If you want to talk, I mean, we don't have to agree on everything, but if you want to talk about any of this, you want to talk about Pete Seeger, his legacy, about how teaching children at a young age is important, teaching them the right values. Hopefully they won't grow up to aspire to be a one percenter and shit all over everybody. They won't aspire to, you know, be a multimillionaire that exploits their own workers for their own gain. You know, hopefully. And I think that's one of the cool things about what my gal does is she teaches young kids. And, you know. Oh, I ran into this song. Let me play this. I love this one. This is one I've never heard before. It is a very upbeat, very lively Pete Seeger song. I had never heard it. And I saw the title of it, and I said, immediately, I think I'm going to like it. I hope you do, too. It's called Bourgeois Blues. Here on the Pinko the Bear Show.
Me and my wife went all over town. Everywhere we went, the people turn us down. Lord, it's a bourgeois town. Woo, it's a bourgeois town. I got the bourgeois blues, I'm gonna spread the news all around. Come all of you people and listen to me. Don't try to buy no home in Washington, D.C. Lord, it's a bourgeois town. Ooh, it's a bourgeois town. I got the bourgeois blues. I'm gonna spread the news all around. Of the brave, the land of the free. I don't want to be mistreated by no bourgeoisie. Lord, it's a bourgeois town. Ooh, it's a bourgeois town. I got the bourgeois blues. I'm gonna spread the news all around.
I got the bourgeois blues. Pete Seeger. Oh, I want to give a shout out to Rip Spindragon, if that's your real name. Because I guess it was last night when the news of Pete dying kind of hit the interwebs. He posted an article, but his jump off was this. It says, Pete was one of the truly great souls of this world. I was lucky to encounter Pete during a function to raise money for our cause. He was a gentleman, but unwavering in his convictions. He sang with Woody Guthrie and was part of the group The Weavers. However, the House Un-American Activities Committee found him in contempt when he refused to answer the questions probing into his political beliefs. Pete was once a member of the Communist Party. His father was a great activist and musicologist himself, introducing Pete to Leadbelly and Woody. Pete quit the party after the revelations of what Stalin did. But he was blacklisted in 1941, which actually lasted until the Smothers Brothers demanded he be on the show, which happened. The Big Muddy was first played then. He was active until his death last night, and he will be sorely missed. Little eulogy jump off reflections from a friend and comrade, Rip Spindragon. So thanks for that, Rip. Appreciate that. Jim Hightower. He used to be a Secretary of Agriculture down in Texas in the 80s when I lived there. But Jim is a political talker, yacker, writer kind of guy, lefty leftist. Jim, I follow him on Facebook, even though I don't really care about Texas anymore. But anyway, Jim says, it never occurred to me that Pete Seeger could die, for I thought of him as a permanent piece of America, like the Bill of Rights. I first met Pete at the Newport Folk Festival in 1969, and it was my good luck to learn from him over the years by joining him in a few of the many grassroots causes he embraced. He genuinely was of, by, and for the people. And his exemplary life gives us all, or gives all of us, a rich, up-tempo, belt-em-out songbook of how common people can team up to battle the bosses, bankers, big shots, bastards, and bullshitters. I like the way Jim Hightower talks. He's from Texas. One of the good things about Texas. We lost Miley Ivins a few years ago, but we still got Jim Hightower. So, so Pete Seeger's dead. But to quote someone who came before him, don't mourn. Don't mourn. Organize. Who knows? That was my bumper sticker on my car. My car's for sale, by the way. It's still in Reno. But yeah, that was the bumper sticker on my car. Don't mourn. Organize. Joe Hill.
I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he. In Salt Lake, Joe, by God, says I, him standing by my bed. They framed you on a murder charge, says Joe, but I ain't dead. Says Joe, but I ain't dead. The copper bosses shot you, Joe. They killed you, Joe, says I. Takes more than guns to kill a man, says Joe, I didn't die. Says Joe, I didn't die. Standing there as big as life, smiling with his eyes. Joe says what they forgot to kill, went on to organize. Went on to organize. Joe Hill ain't dead, he says. Joe Hill ain't never died. Where working men go out on strike, Joe Hill is at their side. Joe Hill is at their side. From San Diego up to Maine, in every mine and mill, where working men go out on strike, says he, you'll find Joe Hill. Says he, you'll find Joe Hill. I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he.
Nope. Don't mourn, organize, motherfuckers. The boss's brain is beneath the workman's cap. The boss needs you. You don't need the boss. Hell, join the IWW. Do something, man. Get active. Get involved. Tag. You're it. Hey, I promised you a song earlier. There was a song about Hitler. Hitler's grave. And, you know, you wouldn't think of Pete Seeger as being somebody who like was all like glory for war, or George Orwell for that matter. But the thing is, if you got to go kill somebody, it's probably a good idea to kill a fascist. I'm just saying. In fact, I got a friend, I got a Facebook friend who I have not met in real life, who is a good friend of my girlfriend's. I've known him online for a couple years. His show, Worldwide Hippies, is, I believe, part of the Commons Project Network that I alluded to earlier that me and some friends have thrown together and trying to get some content up there for people who are interested in, you know, hearing this kind of stuff. We all have our own, you know, our own viewpoints or our own styles. But at any rate, Woody 99 or Konopac, Woody Konopac, and or Konopac, and he has this theory, and he calls it TAFI. Now, I love this, TAFI. It's an acronym, and it stands for Take a Fucking Fascist With You. Take a Fucking Fascist With You, TAFI, right? So if you're going to die, say you got cancer and you're dying and there's no way, or, you know, you're like, you're on your last legs and you're going to die anyway, why not take a fascist with you? I mean, it's tongue-in-cheek, perhaps. Maybe there'll be a movie made out of it, you know, a whole movement of people that are dying and, you know, they figure, hey, well, why don't we make the world a better place? Why don't we just take a fascist with us? And I got to agree with Woody. I think it's a great concept. I'd like to see it made into a movie. And hell, who knows, maybe even an actual movement at some point. So if you are going to go to war, you know, make sure you are fighting for your survival and for the emancipation of the working man. Do not go to war for one capitalist group fighting working men in another capitalist group. You know, I think if you're a Russian in World War II, it's probably a good idea to go fucking kill some Nazis. But you know what? If you're an American in, I say, any war since 1812, not a good idea to go killing anybody. Just not. Unjustified. Not one single fucking justified war in our horrid little history here in America. Vietnam, not justified. Panama, Grenada, you know, just not justified. War of 1812 with Mexico, not justified. World War I, not justified. World War II, perhaps, on the American side, though they didn't seem to be messing with us for a while. But at any rate, so here's a song, I like this one. Pete Seeger, Round and Round, Hitler's Grave. On the Pinko the Bear Show. Ah, it's a rouser. Slap along.
Yee-haw! Now I wished I had a bushel, wished I had a peck, wished I had old Hitler with a rope around his neck.
Hey, round, round, Hitler's grave, round, round we go. Gonna lay that poor boy down, he won't get up no more.
Won't last long, tell you the reason why. We're gonna salt his beef and hang it up to dry.
Hey, round, round, Hitler's grave, round, round we go. Gonna lay that poor boy down, he won't get up no more.
The German army general staff against the misconnection went 100 miles a day, but in the wrong direction.
Hey, round, round, Hitler's grave, round, round we go. Gonna lay that poor boy down, he won't get up no more.
I'm going to Berlin, to Mr. Hitler's town. I'm gonna take my 44 and blow his playhouse down.
Hey, round, round, Hitler's grave, round, round we go. Gonna lay that poor boy down, he won't get up no more.
How Hitler went to Russia in search of Russian oil. But the only oil he'll find there is a pot in which he'll boil.
Hey, round, round, hip and spray, round, round we go. Gonna lay that poor boy down, he won't get up no more.
Woo-hoo! Now, Mr. Hitler's traveling mighty fast, but he's on a one-way track. Started down that Moscow road, but now he's coming back.
Hey, round, round, Hitler's grave, round, round we go. Gonna lay that poor boy down, he won't get up no more. Hey, round, round, Hitler's grave, round, round we go. Gonna lay that poor boy down, he won't get up no more.
Yeah, a rousing little song, Take a Fucking Fascist With You, Round, Round, Hitler's Grave. I like it a lot. I'm not a war guy. I'm not a big fan of putting on a costume and a badge and a gun and, like, telling other people what to do and shooting them if they don't want me to, you know, tell them what to do. I'm just not a fan of hierarchies. But I think when you're faced with serious oppression and, you know, people trying to take away your life, I think you have a right to battle back. And so that's why I salute not only the anarchists in Spain, but also the Russian soldiers in World War II. You know, even though still World War II, it's competing factions of capitalists and fuck them. So it can get a little blurry. But here's I got one more song about the war from Pete Seeger. This one's called Reuben James, and you can hear the words to it. But one of the problems I have with soldiers, with human beings signing up to put on a uniform, swear an oath, and then go kill whoever their bosses, their state tells them to kill. I mean, nobody has to tell you to go kill a fascist, right, when they're coming for you. You just, like, get together with your friends and go, you know, fuck these guys. Let's go fight. Let's go kill a fascist. But when the state is telling you, well, that state and their capitalists, they would like more power and more land, and so we need you to go fight on our side so we can have more land and more, you know, resources, I got a problem with that. And because in the end, the man on each side of a bayonet, doesn't matter, both ends of a bayonet, the man doing the stabbing, the man getting stabbed, the man on both ends of a bayonet is always a working man, a working class man. And the working class have way more in common than with each other. Doesn't matter if they speak the same language and they're not from the same country, blah, 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 but they have way more in common than they do with the assholes that they serve. And then all these people in all of these wars and all of these centuries, really, being sucked in by the power structure, going to war, and nobody remembers their names. And this song really speaks to that.
Later on, Woody came east, joined up with the Almanac Singers. World War II broke out. And there was a song you wrote for the... a ship, she was sunk. I remember coming back in the subway from a booking we had, and he was turning it around in his mind, trying to think how he could make up a song about that ship called the Reuben James. He wrote a lot of verses, and we said Woody needs a chorus, so he went back and made up a chorus out of the tune for the verse, which he'd swiped. Have you heard of a ship called the Good Reuben James? Manned by hard-fighting men, both of honor and fame. She flew the stars and stripes of the land of the free, but tonight she's in her grave at the bottom of the sea. Tell me what were their names, tell me what were their names. Did you have a friend on the Good Reuben? It was there in the dark of that uncertain night that we watched for the U-boats and waited for the fight. Then a whine and a rock and a great explosion roared, and they laid the Reuben James on the cold ocean floor. Tell me, what were their names? Tell me, what were their names? Did you have a friend on the good Reuben James? What were their names? Tell me, what were their names? Did you have a friend on the good Reuben James? Now tonight there are lights in our country so bright. In the farms and in the cities, they're telling of that fight. And now our mighty battleships will steam the bounding main and remember the name of the good Reuben James. Tell me, what were their names? Tell me, what were their names? Did you have a friend on the good Reuben James? What were their names? Tell me, what were their names? Did you have a friend on the good Reuben James?
Oh, look at that. I thought there was going to be a little more to that song. Anyway, it is Pink of the Bear Show. I see that, look at that, man. Bob Carson from Carson's Corner has joined us in the chat room, and that's very, very cool. Very cool. Nice to have you here. One more plug for thecommonsprojectnetwork.com. We got the Authority Smashing Hours with Derek and Paul from Tampa. It's an anarchist show. We got the Pink of the Bear Show, as erratic as it has been lately, but I'm getting my life a little settled here in New York. I plan on being here each and every week. We got, I don't know, who else do we have? You know, get like five shows over there. And I didn't write them down, and I have been drinking. So, you know, Worldwide Hippies and Carson's Corner and Hear Me Monsters with Gwen, Ruth Ann's show as well. So, anyway, life is good. Get on over to thecommonsprojectnetwork.com. We're not even asking for money. We're just doing it for fun because, well, we're a little bougie and we got an extra $7 so we can run a website and buy a six-pack of PBR. So that's what we do. All right. I wanted to mention, I know I've been going on this Pete Seeger. I've got like five more songs and I have more shit to talk about, but I just, you know, maybe we're running into the end of that, but it's come to my attention. A couple of weeks ago, I posted this. It's a 24-minute video with a gentleman talking about the actually talking about the good things from Mao and China, and because you know we grow up in the West and in the capitalist West, and we're fed the stories that the capitalists want us to hear. How horrible he is, and la la la, and it was all a disaster, and all these people died, and na 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 na, right? But that's only, you know, that's what they feed us. That's not necessarily true. And I know in the chat room, Bill Gibbons is I don't know if it's fair to say a big fan of Mao. Almost a Mao can do no wrong kind of guy, and I get some issues with that, and we've talked about that on Facebook, and I don't want to rehash him here. But I found this to be very, very interesting. Mao Zedong, 120 years after his birth, his teachings and example continue to serve the people. And I'm just going to read, I don't know, maybe three paragraphs of this, because I think it's worth thinking about, because we live in this fishbowl. We've got this media that's controlled by the corporations. It's all very capitalistic. They only want one narrative, you know, to be fed to us, or maybe two narratives, but they're very close together in a very narrow range, but never really questioning capitalism, but just maybe a little reform here or there, whatever. But just some highlights from this thing, and I put it in the chat room. It's Red Youthunk, REDYOUTHUK, WordPress.com. And you can listen to the whole thing, 24 minutes, but here's the written text, kind of a synopsis of it. And I think it's worth, listening to, thinking about, particularly if you've just got a 100% negative Ooh, I hope I hit the mute button before I sneezed, because that was loud. But particularly if you've got just a 100% negative view of what happened in China, as one of my friends, Ben Tang, if you're listening, does. So Mao, as it turns out, brought into being 800 million. 800 million. You know, we only have like 300 million in this country. 800 million well-fed, well-clothed, well-educated human beings, a fact that not only China, but all of us should celebrate. China's rise has been a great source of enlightenment that exercises a positive influence on human civilization. So Carlos Martinez, secretary of the Hands Off China campaign, gives a speech on the legacy of Mao's life and the impact that his leadership of the Chinese Revolution had upon China and the wider world. And this is a meeting to mark the 120th anniversary of his birth. It's a legacy that all progressive humanity should celebrate and applaud, according to the speaker here. And yet, and this is where my ears perk up, yet the neoliberal imperialist narrative, that's the one that we live in here in the West, particularly in the United States, ground out by official capitalist academia and popular media, tries to pass off Mao as some kind of social criminal and mass murderer, when in fact he helped to lift fully one quarter of humanity, not one quarter of China, one quarter of all humanity at that time, out of feudal and colonial oppression and the stultifying and backward mode of existence, rife with starvation, disease, famine, and war, crushing oppression of the masses and of women in particular, that characterized pre-revolutionary China. So, I mean, basically, just to jump off on it, it's like, look, man, yeah, some shit might have happened, right? Maybe it wasn't perfect. Maybe you didn't like it. Maybe you're believing some shit that's not true. But one out of four people on the planet, 800 million people, were better off because of the revolution. And I think, you know, I wasn't there, and I'm not an expert on this, and I'm not a Bob Avakian, like, you know, devotee or anything. I don't know. I wasn't there. I haven't read that much about it. But this is the kind of thing that I find interesting. Here's a guy saying, look, man, there's a lot of good stuff that happened. And so what he says is we shouldn't ask how many people died during, because you hear that, well, you know, when Mao was in charge, all millions and millions of people died. We shouldn't ask the question how many people died during the years of industrialization in China, but rather we should ask how many Chinese and how many other human beings owed their lives to the Communist Revolution that gave birth to the People's Republic of China and the development of modern China, a revolutionary process that Mao played such a major important part in initiating, leading, and trying to secure against capitalist restoration. Meaning, yeah, we got this revolution thing, and we're going to try to do it our way, and the fucking capitalists are going to, like, you know, attack us. So he points out that the population, and this is good, the population of China had been stagnant. It had been at like 500 million for, you know, quite a long time. And life expectancy, folks, life expectancy in China, back in 1949, life expectancy, 35 years. You're expected to live 35 years. That's what the actuaries tell you, and then you're dead. This is in 1949. 27 years later, when Mao died, 1976, I was 14. The population, thank you, Lord, for letting me speak in tongues. The population had reached 900 million, almost a billion. And instead of 35 years. Sorry, 35, you're dead. 27 years later, life expectancy, 67 years old. If today China is a modern, enlightened, broadly socialist country, notwithstanding the encroachments of capitalist economy upon its economic and political life, then you know what? 1.3 billion Chinese have much to thank Mao for. All those countries who rely on China to give them some economic and political breathing space from the crushing weight of Anglo-American imperialist oppression, likewise, have much to celebrate on the 120th anniversary of Mao. Now, that's just the, four paragraphs, a little jump off, but this this 24-minute video, it's interesting. And like I say, I wasn't there. I don't know. I didn't live it, right? I don't know. I didn't study it. But here's what I do know, that we live in a bubble. We live in a information bubble that is fed to us here in the West. It's fed to us by corporations who are in bed with capitalism. And they will vilify, they will lie, they will taint, they will, they'll do anything they can to paint an ugly picture of any revolutionaries who try to lift the masses out of their misery. Any revolutionaries who think that maybe, 100% of the wealth of the country belongs to 100% of the people, getting back to what Cindy Sheehan said earlier. Oh, the oil that is under our land here in Iran, well, that should belong to us, and we should benefit from it. So anytime anybody even slightly anti-capitalist, socialist, even social Democrats, but anytime somebody starts talking about social justice or putting people's needs above the corporate greed, the profits of the in the capitalist system, well then they've got to be demonized, they've got to be crushed. It's gonna Chavez or Fidel Castro, Che Guevara, blah blah blah. Because if you live in this bubble, in this capitalist information bubble in America, the only revolutionaries that are any good, well, the only ones that are any good are George Washington, Alexander Hamilton, Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, all right, John Hancock, blah, 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 blah. They're the only revolutionaries that were any good. Everybody else is just he's a revolutionary. He's a radical. He's a bad guy. He killed people. Well, yeah, because the system was killing them and their people, and they just had enough. So I don't dig the demonizing of people, just leaders, revolutionaries. I don't dig the demonizing of them just because they think that the world would be better off without capitalism. The world would be better off without billionaires, trillionaires, private property, aggregation of wealth at the top, and all that goes with that, all the oppression, all the police state actions, all the spying, all the prisons, and secret prisons, and disappearing of people. You know what? I'm not for that. But to be clear, I ain't gonna say that Mao or Stalin or Che or any revolutionary was 100% perfect and great. But I think it's worth looking at in the bigger picture. This is just one example, but you can go and you can look at what was going on in Vietnam and in the whole Southeast Asia region, and I don't even know if I want to get into that. But let's just say that the larger point is we should be careful about what information that we consume and what sources we consume it from. And what I've found out in my last 5-10 years of looking into this kind of stuff is that most of the stuff that I was taught in this bubble, in this Western capitalist bubble, going to the right universities, going to the right public schools, joining the right clubs, being part of this institution or that, it's the things that I have been taught, most of it is bullshit. Most of it is wrong. Most of it is propaganda. And that's why I couldn't even listen to more than 15 minutes of fucking Obama tonight on the State of the Union. He was just bullshit after bullshit after bullshit. And it was just impossible. And so anybody listening to the show, I just hope you question more things. What did you learn today? Well, how do you know it's true? Track it down. Look at the track record of the person saying this, the track record of the person saying that. You know, critically think. And when somebody teaches you something, question it. Question it. Look at the evidence. Our entire existence is a school. What did you learn in school today?
What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that Washington never told a lie. I learned that soldiers seldom die. I learned that everybody's free. That's what the teacher said to me. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that policemen are my friends. I learned that justice never ends. I learned that murderers die for the crimes, even if we make a mistake sometime. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned our government must be strong. It's always right and never wrong. Our leaders are the finest men, and we elect them again and again. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that war is not so bad. I learned about the great ones we have had. We fought in Germany and in France, and someday I might get my chance. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school.
Yeah, rest in peace. Alright, rest in peace, Pete Seeger. I love you. I love you all.
Arise, ye workers from your slumber.
Rise.
Arise, ye prisoners of want. That's right. For reason in revolt now thunder. Chains of hatred, greed, and fear. Ha ha! Away with all your superstitions. Serve our masters. Arise, arise. We'll change henceforth the old tradition and spurn the dust to win the prize. So comrades, come on and rally. Then the last fight, let us face. The international unites the whole darn human race. So comrades, come on, let's go rally. And the last fight, let us face. The international unites the whole darn human race. No more deluded by reaction. On tyrants only we'll make war. The soldiers too will take strike action. They'll break ranks and fight no more. And if those cannibals keep trying to sacrifice us to their pride, each at the forge must do their duty, and we'll strike while the iron is hot. So comrades, come on, let's go rally, and the last fight let us face. The international unites the whole beautiful human race. So comrades, come on, let's go rally. Ha! And the last fight, let us face. The international unite the whole darn human race.
There you have it. Tony Babino, everybody. Tony Babino. He'll be here all week. Please try the veal. Pickle the Bear Show, available in podcast right after I hang this thing up. Take about 5 minutes if you missed the earlier part of the show. You can also catch it over at the commonsprojectnetwork.org when I put it up tomorrow or perhaps even the next day. Love you all. Love you all. I got to go. Good night. Keep fighting.